This morning we've heard two stories about miraculous feedings, which seems appropriate on Communion Sunday. Whenever I hear this story, and it's in the Gospels multiple times, the story about the feeding of the 5,000, I'm always struck by how clueless the disciples seem, by their lack of understanding that Jesus is going to be able to feed people. In this particular version of the story that we heard today, leading up to it, Jesus has calmed the storm. He's cast demons out of a man into a bunch of pigs. He's healed a woman who's been hemorrhaging for years, and he raised a dead girl back to life. And the disciples are worried that he can't handle feeding a few people on the hillside. It's like that with the Israelites here too, right? They've seen the power of God in the plagues of Egypt. They've been led out of slavery by God. They've walked through the Red Sea with walls of water on either side of them. And now the first time their tummies start to rumble a little bit, they suddenly are worried that God's not going to feed them, that God's led them out in the wilderness to die after all that God has done. And it's pretty easy to be critical of the Israelites here. I mean, they turn on Moses and Aaron, who have literally risked their lives to free them. They don't trust God, who has proven trustworthy time and time again. They seem ungrateful for their newfound freedom, even suggesting they would prefer to be back in slavery where they had food. But this time around, as I read the story of the hungry Israelites in the wilderness, I found myself having more compassion than I'd felt for them in the past. That line about how they wished that God had killed them when they sat by the flesh pots and ate their fill of bread, it's a really heartbreaking line. And it reminded me of one of the foster children we had who so desperately wanted to go back and live with his birth parents. And I knew that that had been an abusive family and couldn't understand why he would want to do that. And a friend and I were talking about this when I mentioned that connection to her. She said, "Oh, when you said foster child, I thought you were going to talk about food hoarding, because that's also a thing for kids who don't get consistent meals. They'll eat really fast, they'll overeat, they'll take food and maybe hide it in their under their bed or in their drawers, because life has taught them that they might not have enough food, and when they have the chance, they want to make sure they take advantage of that and store it up for later." So here's what I think. I don't think that the Israelites are irritating whiners, and I don't think that they're ungrateful brats, and I don't think that they're selfish people with weak faith. I think that they are people who are traumatized. I think that the Israelites on an individual and a collective level are working through immense amounts of trauma and probably some very legitimate PTSD. And I'm not a mental health professional. Some of you are. I don't want to get too far out of my lane here. But I think it's pretty safe to say that enslavement is a traumatizing experience. That genocide, remember that story about the Pharaoh insisting all the Hebrew baby boys be killed, right? Genocide is a traumatic experience. Leaving your home, and we're seeing this with people from Afghanistan and other places, that experience of having to grab what you can and leave your home and go into the unknown, that's a traumatic experience. It's 100% understandable that the Israelites would have heightened anxiety, that they would struggle to trust their leaders, Moses and Aaron and God, that they would be hyper-focused on immediate needs and unable to step back and look at the bigger picture. They are experiencing collective trauma. And I noticed something else reading the story this time around, that the only person who gets angry here is Moses. Now, last week, God got angry at Moses for all of his excuses. But in this story, it's only Moses who gets angry when the people fail to follow the directions. The text doesn't say anything about God being angry. It does say that God heard the people. It says that God showed up and was revealed to the people. It says that God fed the people. It says that when the people disobeyed God's command to not leave any food for the next morning, God didn't smite them. God didn't refuse to feed them, send them to bed without supper. It's just that that extra food wasn't any good in the morning. So the mere fact that God provides food for the Israelites shows a deep divine compassion. But I think the way in which God provides the food is particularly redemptive for these people in this particular circumstance. In the past, when I've read this story, in my mind, it always was that some of the Israelites took more than their share of food. That's why there was extra left over the next day that was wormy, right? I like the Message translation of that. It was wormy and rancid. It was nasty. Because they took too much. But actually, if we read the text closely, it seems like that's not what happened. It says that those who gathered much had nothing over, and those who gathered little had no shortage. Some households are bigger than others, right? They gathered as much as each of them have need. The piece of the instructions that people failed to follow is Moses' insistence to let no one have any of it left until morning. So if we think about this, if everybody had as much as they needed, and some people had some left over till morning, then that doesn't mean people are taking more than their fair share. It means people are going to bed hungry. It means they're so terrified there won't be more in the morning that they can't bring themselves to eat all that they have. They're going hungry to try to ensure that they have some food left tomorrow. They're not acting out of greed. They're acting out of anxiety. And a colleague in my Narrative Lectionary Facebook group pointed out that how God responds, this daily structure that God creates, is exactly what is needed to help people move through trauma. And if any of you have ever worked with people in trauma, that's what the professionals will say, right? You need to be consistent. You need a daily structure. You need healthy limits to guide people through that. And so God is parenting well these people who are in trauma, this daily manna that can't be saved overnight. It's a miraculous and gentle reminder to the people that they will be taken care of, that they can trust God. They don't have to deprive themselves or go to bed hungry or worry about whether they'll have food from day to day. And God's response goes even beyond the needs of these traumatized individuals to address the system in which they live. So I love the Narrative Lectionary, but I know sometimes there's really big leaps as we go through the story of the Bible. And we skipped from Jacob to Moses, right? Last week was our first week with Moses. But in between Jacob and Moses is this guy you might have heard of named Joseph, right? Jacob's son. And that's the story that gets us to the enslavement of the people where we start in Exodus. So you might remember the highly dysfunctional family system that Joseph is in, where his brothers sell him into slavery to some people from Egypt who are traveling through. And Joseph manages to rise in the ranks in Egypt because he can interpret dreams and he gives wise counsel. Part of that counsel is there's a famine coming, we need to store up food. And they do. Egypt stores up food, which means when the famine hits, people come flooding into Egypt looking for food, which Pharaoh is more than happy to give them for a price. And at first that price is money, is grain, is other things. But when people run out of ways to pay for the food, Pharaoh starts accepting payment in human beings. That's how people become enslaved in Egypt, because they're trying to get food. In the wilderness, God rejects this oppressive and traumatic economic system. In fact, God makes it impossible for people to store up food. Everyone is on equal footing. Everyone has what they need without becoming indebted to other people. Not only has God led the people out of slavery, but God is working to make sure that the Israelites do not now create their own enslaving and traumatizing systems. So it turns out that the Israelites were not a bunch of whiny brats, that they were people dealing with incredible amounts of personal and communal and generational trauma. And it turns out that God understands, that God provides, to use popular lingo today, God provides trauma-informed care for the people. Listening well, responding gently, providing consistent, loving presence, even in the face of emotional outbursts. And God works with the people toward a system that will inflict less trauma in the future. It also turns out that this is a really important story for us to hear right now, or I'll at least just speak for myself, for me to hear. Maybe you're feeling some of what I'm feeling these days too, like tired for no good reason, irritated too easily, whiny. At least I whine in my head about all the things that I have to do, even though they're just normal, reasonable things that I've always had to do. And I want to be clear, the COVID pandemic is not equal to enslavement and genocide, and some of us, certainly myself, have managed these past 19 months, all things considered, pretty well. But it also turns out that finding some more compassion for the Israelites in the wilderness is giving me a little more compassion for myself these days. So I also want to be clear that suffering is not a competitive sport. My weariness is not morally wrong because other people have more reason to be tired than I do. My trauma responses are not invalid because I haven't had it as bad as someone else, because my experience during the pandemic hasn't been really real trauma the way some people's experience has. And it turns out that the God who so lovingly cared for the traumatized Israelites in the wilderness is the same God who still responds to traumatized people, which I would argue is to a greater or lesser extent all of us right now. God still responds with compassion and grace. God who still hears our cries, a God who still provides food and hope and peace and direction and encouragement and rest and joy in the wilderness of our lives. A God who still says, here's what you need for today. Don't worry about tomorrow. Thanks be to God.
We'll now take a few moments to personally consider the words that Joanne has just shared with us before we share